Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.
In 2002, George Bush declared North Korea, Iran, and Iraq the axis of evil. Axis to Grind, Inside North Korea, by Irwin Ustindi, is a photo, film, and digital artwork exhibition. It exposes the 50-year vilification of North Korea by the West. Irwin Ustindi is a Vancouver artist and community organizer. He joins me in the studio. Hi, Irwin.
Morning, Chris.
So the exhibition is a culmination of previous photos and film from previous trips to Korea. Why did you originally go to North Korea?
Well, I went to attend a couple of things, the World Festival of Youth and Students and an international march for reunification and peace on the Korean Peninsula, which the World Festival of Youth and Students doesn't happen anymore. It was something that happened in different countries around the world when the Soviet Union would sponsor that large event. It was basically an anti-imperialist and world festival for younger people from different countries. And the one in North Korea attracted 15,000 people from 150 countries, and I, along with 125 other Canadians, students and youth, attended, and I stayed for 6 weeks and participated on behalf of the Canadian Federation of Students in a march for the reunification of Korea from the northern tip with China down to Panmunjom, the DMZ, which divides and separates South Korea and North Korea.
And Bush's rhetoric of the axis of evil certainly relays one perception. What kind of perception are you trying to relay with your work?
Well, you know, having had the history of going there and doing international solidarity work with East Asia in Canada and trying to promote Canadians and Canadian political organizers to the reality of the struggles, the people's struggles in East Asia, in particular the Philippines, East Timor, Burma, Korea, I learned that there isn't much awareness in Canada of East Asian political struggles, and there's very little connection. And I think that's partly to do with the kind of racist structure within Canada, where the immigrant communities are so separated, and there's very little unity between the immigrant communities, the settler communities, and the white communities. And when we saw solidarity like ANC and Nelson Mandela support and in the 1980s in Central America, we didn't see that same type of international solidarity with East Asia. And so I became acutely aware that there was a need to promote and advocate for human rights and people's struggle in East Asia. And, you know, like you said, the axis of evil rhetoric is not just hollow words. It's backed up with pretty significant military might. And when the United States last year suggested first strike nuclear capacity on North Korea, we're talking about serious consequences, and we're talking about a continuation of the Korean War, which after 50 years still really hasn't ended. It ended in 1953 with a truce. It didn't end with a treaty, and the Canadians and Americans came back home, and basically the war continued, and the families were separated by the border. The two societies developed quite distinctly. And here we are 50 years later, and the Cold War deep freeze is still alive and well in this one spot in the world.
I know when I hear Bush's rhetoric, I personally don't buy it, but then at the same time, there's a void there. And I went to go see the exhibition on Thursday, and I was very refreshed by that void being filled. And I saw beautiful photographs of beautiful people smiling and with lush green lands, and it's certainly not the perception that I've come across and that I've noticed was even missing. I saw one photo that was the large stadium filled with people, flags, lots of bright colors, fireworks. Can you explain what that photo was?
Well, that was a photo I did shoot in 1989 at the May Day Stadium. It's the largest stadium in the world, 150,000 people. And what is so brilliant and unique that takes place probably only in North Korea, no other place in the world, is the mass games, the Arirang. It's almost, to be crude, it's like a human animation. Basically, tens of thousands of people collaborating and with synchronized movements with color books. And you basically have the effect is basically like a pixels on a television, that you have thousands of people producing anti-imperialist messages, the triumphs of the North Korean people and their country, and it's a form of entertainment. It's a symbol. It's certainly something of national pride, and it actually continues to this day. North Koreans are it's a society where Westerners are certainly welcome to go as tourists, and I think many people, one of the more popular attractions in North Korea is the is going to attend the Arirang Mass Games, and it's quite a sight to behold. And the photo, you probably saw the slogan for anti-imperialist solidarity and friendship, and that's pretty consistent with the North Korean message to the world, that they are looking for solidarity, they are looking for friendship, because they're at war with the United States, and you know, enormous resources are diverted to defend the country against what only ended recently, which is kind of a live war games that the United States conducted with South Korean troops. And so the North Koreas always had to be on the war ready, and as a result, we continue to suffer a horrible tragedy on that peninsula. And I think, you know, like you said, the photos provide a different perspective, and I think a different perspective is really needed right now. Just in December, the United States Congress approved $200 million to advocate for North Korean human rights abuses. And, you know, this is the United States government that drops peanut butter sandwiches in Afghanistan. I think we have to challenge and question the motivation and the rhetoric that's coming out against North Korea. And I think the more people can see and appreciate the struggle and the reality in North Korea, the more possibility we'll have that there would be opposition if the U.S. would attack North Korea, and the more capacity we have to understand how North Korea is acting at the bargaining table. There's current peace negotiations that are happening, and later this month, hopefully, Japan, South Korea, Russia, China, United States, North Korea will get together. The United States would like to think to end the North Korea's nuclear program, but really it's about getting what North Korea has asked for decades, which is a peace treaty with the United States, a non-aggression pact. And in 1994, there was United States and North Korea came very, very close to going to war, and there was an agreement signed between the two countries, and there's three components of that agreement. One, that the United States would normalize relations with North Korea. The second, that they would provide fuel aid as other programs kicked in. And the third was that they would build light water reactors to provide electrical power for North Korea, so that North Korea would stop its cold fusion nuclear program. What has happened last year was that the United States declared that North Korea had failed and broken this agreement. And that's pretty much picked up by all the Western media, including all the Canadian media. But what isn't told is the history of U.S. neglect, the fact that the United States did absolutely nothing to normalize relations. It certainly got way worse during Bush. And secondly, they dragged their feet as long as they possibly could for 7 years and didn't build those light water reactors. So North Korea not only was compounded with the famine from floods and drought, but they had no electricity and fertilizer, fuel to do the basic infrastructure development and to bounce back from these terrible calamities. And I think I can understand why North Korea would say, "Hey, you know, we have to start our nuclear program again." It is war in North Korea with the United States and on the Korean Peninsula, and I think we need to understand more about that background and not just take what CBC says is North Korea's, you know, terrible state of affairs.
Anti-imperialism, solidarity, and friendship was a consistent theme that was relayed throughout the exhibition, and not only just in, you know, little tiny billboards or scoreboards that were in various photographs, but also in the body language that people expressed in the photographs. It was very friendly and very warm. I mean, it's certainly not the image that came to my mind when thinking about North Korea. Do you think the U.S. has an active interest in postponing a reunification?
That's I think so. Yeah, and that's a complicated, you know, Korea, of course, and I don't consider myself an expert on Korea, but I've witnessed being in both sides of the border, and I what you see in the South right now, especially with the younger generation, is and we saw it with the election of a president just less than a year ago on an anti-U.S. ticket. I think the younger generation has gotten tired of the fact that U.S. troops are in South Korea and the killing of two young South Korean schoolgirls in 2002. Certainly, we saw the underbelly of South Korean sentiment towards the United States, that South Korea is in fact ready for a detente. South Korea wants the sunshine policy with North Korea. They want to move forward, and they want to reunite. And it's certainly been a plan for North Korea. Now, how that happens is a more complicated question, but it is certainly in the United States' best interest to forestall that and to sell arms in the region and to sell its space-based weapons program. It's no coincidence this month Japan and Australia both signed on to the space-based missile defense shield, and that is really a large part to block what they call these promoters of weapons of mass destruction like North Korea. You know, it's only the CIA from the United States that says North Korea has the bomb. Whether they do or not is not necessarily the central issue. The key issue is the United States prepared to de-escalate the conflict? And I really haven't seen very little in that direction. Fortunately, there's multilateral talks now, so China is playing a bigger part, and South Korea is playing a bigger part. I think the issue here is less what happens between United States and North Korea. Interestingly, I think what to watch is what happens between South Korea and United States.
I want to get to that in a minute, but first I want to look at more photographs that you have of South Korea and the black and white ones. There's some black and white photographs that capture images of police, riot police, and students and what looks like tear gas. Can you explain what those photos are?
Sure. Those are photos from Chondaehop. Until about 1999, there was the student movement did conduct hand-to-hand combat with riot troops, and the riot police in South Korea are pretty vicious. I experienced those protests firsthand, and I thought it was important to show some photos from both sides of the wall, both sides of the division line. I have photos, you know, more than 1,000, and I just chose those because I think people will be inspired. The South Korean, in particular the trade union movement, is very inspiring, and I think Canadian trade union activists can learn a lot from the militancy and the conviction and the organizational structure and the seriousness by which South Koreans tackle what was for many years military dictatorship in South Korea, and how they hold the government accountable to the people's needs, and we really don't see enough of that in Canada. So those photos were from the student movement, and I have other photos that aren't part of the show, but from the DMZ, from the Southern perspective. But I think it's exciting for me to be able to put photos from North and South Korea together in the same place, and I think in particular the Koreans living in Vancouver who come to see the show will be also happy to see both sides represented.
And as you mentioned, a relationship to look towards in the future is the relationship and the interaction between the U.S. and the South Korean government. What is happening there with the government and the U.S. and the student and labor movement?
Well, I mentioned the killing of the two South Korean schoolgirls, and what resulted from that was unprecedented South Korean political protest hitting the streets. And for the first time, there was 10,000 people in front of the U.S. embassy, which had never happened before. Before, it was a no-go zone. So there was outpouring of anger and resentment towards U.S., what many consider military occupation of South Korea. In 1980s, there was a horrible massacre in Gwangju of peasant farmer protesters, and that was done under the direct supervision of the U.S. command. The U.S. has command over the South Korean troops, so we're talking about a very significant military system in South Korea. And in particular, we see, and I think I would have to say it replicates itself here in Vancouver with the Korean community, we see the older generation still very afraid and very hostile to the the sunshine policy, the friendship towards North Korea that's opening up, and that is being practiced by the younger generation. And that's how the recent presidential elections took place last year. In the last week of the election, there was an enormous internet email surge among the younger voters, and they swept the opposition, the underdog to the presidency, to the Blue House. Now, South Korea is actually, I think, the most technologically sophisticated country on the planet, the most people online and most digitized society. And I think there's no way that this new generation will have their dream of reunification thwarted. The question is, when will it happen, and who will control it? And certainly the South Korean tribal, the corporate conglomerates would like to control that and see a ready, poor labor market in North Korea. But we'll have to see, and we'll have to see what kind of what role the region plays, China and Japan as well.
What can we do here in Canada?
Well, I think it was sad to see lately when the U.S. Started attacking North Korea for dropping out of the program, the agreement that they had, the 1994 Accord, characterize themselves as a proliferator of weapons of mass destruction. They do have the capacity to produce missiles, but whether or not they could put anything on them is very doubtful. Canada followed the U.S. suit. Canada dropped food aid, which was a horrible mistake. Fortunately, there's Canadian churches. The Canadian Food Grains Bank provides terrific grain and food shipments to North Korea. We need to, at this point, provide aid and assistance as North Korea recovers from the devastating floods and droughts. And we need to continue. Canada did open up diplomatic relations with North Korea 2 years ago. The Chinese embassy is in charge of that. From the Canadian ambassador to China is in charge of that. We need to normalize. We need to continue doing what we do with Cuba, is to chart an independent path from the United States' programs. And I think we have only good things to come in terms of our relations with North Koreans, and hopefully Canada could play a role in supporting the reunification process.
And your exhibition is spanning throughout the month of January. Can you tell us what's coming up?
Sure. The exhibition runs to the 20th of January at Capilano College Art Gallery. It's surprisingly quick to get to over the bridge in North Vancouver. But there's an online program, and the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has just picked up the exhibition and is featured for the run of this week until Thursday, the 15th, at www.cbcradio3.com. And there's a flash presentation that they've put up on their CBC site. And the accesstogrind.com, that's A-X-I-S, togrind.com, website is a great resource. There's the gallery show, there's a film festival, and there's the online program. And the film festival takes place next Saturday, the 17th, at SFU Harbor Center. I think it'll be probably sold out, but there may be the earlier times. It runs from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. The number of Korean students in Vancouver, they're very excited about the program. There's a great movie about North Korean soccer team and many wonderful stories in the film program. The film program is also taking place on Wednesday and Thursday at Capilano College, so if people really would like a great seat, and that would be probably the place to catch the film festival before it heads to Langara and UBC.
I've been speaking with Erwin Ustindi. Erwin is a Vancouver artist and community organizer, and you can view his website, Access to Grind Inside North Korea, at accesstogrind.com.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.